Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio, year 13, we believe. We started our life in a studio in a barn on the Naramata Bench. We have two very special winemakers with us today. The second one, the one who will close the show in a two-part interview, is Graham Pierce. I first met Graham when he was the winemaker at Mount Boucherie. And then the most wonderful surprise one day, when we all woke up to realize that Sanka Tennet had sold Black Hills Winery and Nota Bene, perhaps the greatest Bordeaux blend in Canada. And the new winemaker was Graham Pierce. Graham had to fill those shoes. And he did so for 10 years, and he exceeded all expectations. He made great wines, and his Nota Bene was just priceless. And then when it was sold, he moved on to Time Winery with the legend Harry McWaters. We all know, of course, that Harry passed away after building and opening his incredible winery downtown in Penticton. And now, it's wonderful to announce that Graham Pierce is the general manager and winemaker at Kitsch Wines. Even though he's talking about the wines that Grant Biggs made over the last couple of years, we know that he is going to take that fruit and make sensational wines. And as I've said before in this show, follow the winemaker, follow the wines. Simple as that. Follow Graham Pierce, you're going to get great wines. And this time it's with Kitsch. But we start with someone I've known as long as Graham Pierce, and perhaps even longer, Randy Ullum, who is the senior VP and the chief winemaker at Kendall Jackson Wines in Napa, Sonoma, and very much part of the driving force behind Jackson Family Wines. He's an acknowledged master. He's one of the stars of California wines. And for me to get a chance to sit down and talk to him for close to half an hour is a big deal. I liked it so much, we put it on Zoom. And I'm going to ask my friend Corey Wood if he would kindly get that Zoom interview on our website, tastingroomradio.com, so you can enjoy it visually. If you like the audio, you're going to love the video. He looks like the sheriff of the town that the bad guys want to take over. That's what he looks like. His name is Randy Ullum, and he's very good and very much to the point. He knows exactly what he's talking about when it comes to wine, whether it's California or world wines. So here's our conversation with Randy Ullum and Graham Pierce on Tasting Room Radio. Cheers. Enjoy. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. We're happy to tell you that the restaurant and tasting rooms are now open. The restaurant, Thursday to Sunday, noon to 7 p.m. The tasting room and the wine shop, Wednesday to Sunday, 11 to 5. And the tasting room is now offering sit-down flights featuring four wines. But you can count on the same warm hospitality and fun that Unsworth is known for. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com. I'm Terry David Mulligan and Tasting Room Radio and the Mulligan Stew Podcast. I have discovered an old friend of mine in the wine business, but he's a guy you'd like just even if he were running a gas station on the corner. Randy Ullum has joined me from, what's your official title on your card? What does it say in your card?
Oh, I'm the wine master and senior vice president, Jackson Family Wine, Kendall Jackson. Just a little low family-run winery in California.
How are family wineries doing in California these days?
Well, actually, you know, when you compare the, you know, family-run winery versus a corporate winery, there's a huge difference because usually the families are in it for the long haul and always in it for quality and consistency and with a long-term vision versus some of the corporations are just in it for the, you know, quick cash, quick buck, right, and, you know, are trying to please a lot of investors on a quarterly basis. And that gets to be a bit challenging for sure. And quality isn't necessarily at the top of their vision. So family run wineries are wonderful. And they tend to also invest in the source, the dirt, the soil, the vineyards.
Exactly.
Vineries where your corporate wineries usually don't want that those assets listed on their balance sheet. So, you know, with, like for us as an example, we have around 14,000 acres running just up and down the coast of California, plus our other entities in the portfolio in Oregon. Yeah. Italy, France, South Africa, Australia, really But you know, our focus here in California is the coast, the cool, what's called the cool coast of California. So that runs from, you know, the districts 1 through 7, 1 through 8, Lake County, Mendocino County, Napa, Sonoma, Monterey, and Santa Barbara, Pacific Coast. And you have hills and mountains, you know, that coastal front range there. And so we have the effect of the fog and the effect of the ocean and the coolness that gives us a much nicer and longer growing season to really develop the flavors, the aromatics, and the grapes. So you know, back to the question about families, you know, families are more often than not in it for the long term.
That what you take out, you got to give back.
Yes, you do. And you know, we're very sustainable and on everything. We're completely certified. In fact, our Grand Reserve tier, which we have our Vintners Reserve, Grand Reserve, Jackson Estate, and Satcher, the Grand Reserve is now all, you know, it's like our favorite 6% of each variety, so to speak, and our favorite blocks. All of our vineyards are certified. We're now putting the CCSW on the label. Having certified vineyards, I mean, it's really kind of nice because you have, you know, you're treating the land right, you're treating the people right, you're treating the animals
sure.
in the area correctly, you're giving back to the soil, you're not just extracting everything in one fell swoop and walking away from it. You know, as you receive grapes that Mother Nature gives you, whatever yield that is through those vineyards, you do have to put back. And a lot of folks will just like dump nitrogen and this and that out there. We're trying to build up the biomass and the organic matter in the soils so that those soils do perform and are happy and more lush and content going forward in the future. Kind of sounds sometimes a little corny, but it's dead serious.
By the way, those of you watching on Zoom, ignore the James R. Olam. That just doesn't happen. It's Randy.
Yeah, nobody says that.
Nobody.
Somehow this system got my full name, my legal name, and it fools everybody.
Does anybody call you James in your family?
No, not even my mother. When she's upset, she calls me Randall.
Okay. I have neglected my host position here. I should have asked you straight off the front. How the first 6 months been for you, you personally? How did you hunker down? And when are you starting to reopen? You're going to do that now, aren't you?
Yeah, so this has been quite interesting and a bit difficult for me, actually, because my last, this is a big period. This time is when I do a lot of traveling because, yeah. You know, things are quieter at the winery and quieter in the vineyards. And I usually, you know, from January through June right now, am gone 60, 65% of the time going everywhere into the different markets and doing marketing, PR, winemaking, wine representation types of things. But my last trip was actually to Vancouver for the wine festival.
They got in just under the wire.
Literally. I mean, just getting going through customs there and immigration, you know, I got a pass and I got to come in and then came home and bang, that was it. And so I've been sort of housebound and workbound ever since.
Sure.
So when everything, you know, sort of just shut down, thankfully, I'm on the production side of a business that is considered very essential. Everybody needs wine, and I think we all need wine right about now. And so I've been working probably 65% of the time at the winery.
Wow.
and 35 or so at home. Kind of depends on what's going on because, you know, you have to be tasting through all, we have a lot of lots and we're working on our blends and things like that for this year. So it takes days to go through all those lots. You know, sure. There's almost 1,000 for the Chardonnay and, you know, I don't know, maybe 100 and it'd be like 500 or so for just Pinot Noir and things like that. So you have to do that, you know, at work. And then of course we've all gotten into the Zooms and the Teams and the Skypes and all those things. And some of those I can do at work, but a lot of them, you know, they want you to be at home because you're supposed to be home sheltering in place. So I do it like I'm home right this minute, but I'll be back at the winery, about 1 for the rest of the afternoon. But we've done a lot of, Skyping and teaming and zooming, and we even set up for the past let's say March, April, May, June, March, April, May, we were doing like at home with Kendall Jackson on Sunday, late afternoons, early evenings, you know, for a little session. And I'd talk about, you know, I'd be sitting either in the living room or on the back deck or by the fireplace and tasting several different wines and sometimes doing a food and wine pairing with, you know, all Chardonnays and a bunch of cheeses and things like that. So we're doing a lot of that to kind of get out into the marketplace and keep people going and keep connected with everyone. And then just in general, the state of California started to release some of their rules around Memorial Day, which was the end of May. And the first thing they did was say, okay, tasting rooms could reopen only if they had outside seating and food, did food and wine pairing. So they did that. And, you know, that's nice. Only by reservation too.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, following all the guidelines with the masks, the cleaning, the cleanliness, the distancing and all of that. And then they over the course, so it's really been maybe, well, that's May, June. So every Friday, it seems like they release something new. And so then they went, and like the next weekend, they said, okay, we're going to allow restaurants to open, but only for outdoor seating, if they have outdoor seating 6 feet apart. And so some opened then. In the interim, there were some restaurants that were quite entrepreneurial and did, you know, takeouts. At first, they started out with their whole menu, and then they realized that was insane. And then they would kind of pare their menus down, but they were doing takeouts. But so then we went to the outside dining only. And then the following week that went to, okay, you can dine inside also, but still with your social distancing. And then they opened the wineries to any winery. You didn't have to have food or to go with the wine. So that made everybody happy. And that just happened. And then I think this last weekend, they've opened up some of the some stores, the large stores.
Okay. Are
open. But it's still the shelter in place, you know, stay home has from work, that has not ended yet. So everyone who isn't in an essential industry is still home. You know, all their children are still home. Everyone's still home. And as an example for us at our company, you know, everybody in finance, marketing, PR, legal, all of that, they're all still home, working from home. You know, technically by law, they can't come into work. And that may change as we get into July. Everybody's kind of thinking that they might.
They're getting a little antsy as well.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. Bouncing off the walls.
Well, and the music business, I've done a couple of interviews lately, and they've got albums. They've released albums. They can't tour the albums. They're going crazy. And they got to get out. And of course, some clubs are going under and restaurants are going under and some wineries will go under.
I'm sure that will happen. Unfortunately, what we're seeing in the marketplace, which is kind of interesting, is that the direct-to-consumer portion, I mean, if you had that dialed in, that's skyrocketed.
Yeah.
You know, hundreds and hundreds of percent over and above what's ever happened. You know, the shipping, you know, regardless of whether it's wine or anything, you know, Amazon, UPS, FedEx.
They are very happy.
But the other thing that's interesting is, you know, granted, you know, all the restaurants closed, so all what we, that's when you sell wine to a restaurant, that's called on premise. So your wine is there, you open it and you drink it there. That's our term is on premise. And then off premise is like going to a store and buying the wine, a grocery store or a wine and spirit store, a wine shop, and you buy the wine, you take it home. That's off premise. And so, the retail side of the business. So that side has gone high too, not hundreds and hundreds of percent, but it's up, you know, almost double, you know, 70%, 50, 60, 70% up, which is quite amazing.
Amazing.
Because everybody is sitting at, you know, they're sitting at home and they can't go out and about. So that's been very interesting. So depending on the winery and your situation and what percent is on and off premise kind of depends on how well you're doing for sure. But we're all anxious for everything to reopen so everybody can get back into play. Even hotels were closed here. I live in Healdsburg, and every hotel closed except for one. And now a couple of them are reopening. Okay. And you know, the wine country is saying, okay, you know, come make reservations, but we're ready.
I knew this was going to be a two-parter because we like to talk. His name is Randy Ullum. He is the wine master and senior VP at Jackson Family Wines and Kendall Jackson. And we'll be right back with part two, especially talking about the wines right after this. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. We're happy to tell you that the restaurant and tasting rooms are now open. The restaurant, Thursday to Sunday, noon to 7 p.m. The tasting room and the wine shop, Wednesday to Sunday, 11 to 5. And the tasting room is now offering sit-down flights featuring four wines. But you can count on the same warm hospitality and fun that Unsworth is known for. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch, who are now officially open. They offer two new releases from Crown and Thieves, The Winemaker's Wench, which is a crisp, aromatic summer slugger, and also an unfiltered rosé titled Pinky Blinder. You can find these wines and the stunning new Black Swift Vineyards at Black Swift, 2345 Boucherie Road, Kelowna, and hatchwines.com. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio, and I have on the phone Randy Ullum, the senior VP, and more importantly, the wine master at Jackson Family Wines and Kendall Jackson in California, Napa, Sonoma, and up and down that coast, frankly. Before I ask you about your wines, I'm dying to ask about your wines. The growing season continues. The vines don't care about any of this.
No, they don't. Mother Nature doesn't know what's going on. The weather continues. The vines are happy. The vines are growing great.
Good season, yeah. Our mutual friend, Marlo Bruce, sent me some wines that we can talk about. I assume that these are 2018s, the Kendall Jackson Vintners Reserve Chardonnay.
2018, correct.
2018, okay.
Just getting into 18 for, say, the Pinot Noir and things like that. We're just working on putting the 2019s.
Well, we love your Reserve Chardonnay. Has it changed much from when it established itself? Because each season's different. You can adjust it along the way, I kind of wonder.
Well, I've been here 27 years, effectively, or we'll complete that, and this will be my 28th harvest with Kendall Jackson coming up. And so it has evolved over the years. It had a little bit less of barrel fermentation.
Yeah.
When I started, it was at 60%, and we're at 95% barrel ferment, which is critically important because that builds out that mid palate. The new oak component is French and American.
Okay.
You know, it's not very much. It's, you know, maybe 10 or 11% new oak. So, you know, you get a kiss of the toastiness and the vanillins from the newer oak. But the more important part is to have as much of the wine, the juice fermented into wine in a barrel, a 60-gallon barrel, 225-liter barrel, because that really builds out that palate. We like our Chardonnays to be, you know, rich and round. And so we've gone from the 60 to the 95. We've gone from maybe 40%. Estate grapes to we're running 85 more or less percent from our own vineyards into that wine. And so, you know, every year, you know, we make minuscule little changes. It's kind of like saving your money for the future. So it's the little tiny things that we do on the clones and the Chardonnay for the Chardonnay, the areas, the kinds of oak, the forest that the oak comes from. We love the center of France and the Vosges district over there. And then how do you toast your barrels and all these little nuances that we do to just make it better and better and better. And it's a very consistent product. And that's why it's the number one selling Chardonnay.
I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. Randy Ullum, the senior VP, and more importantly, the wine master at Jackson Family Wines and Kendall Jackson in California, Napa, Sonoma. The Kendall Jackson Vintners Reserve Sauv Blanc, has it changed over the years?
It has.
And conversely, when I say has it changed, I'm kind of wondering, have our expectations of what a Sauv Blanc is changed as well?
Well, everyone, Sauvignon Blanc is really a unique variety because you have the folks that like the New Zealand style of Sauvignon Blanc, which is very herbaceous, green grass. And then you have the other side of the equation is the very, you know, a riper, more tropical grapefruit, even a little bit of pineapple in your Sauvignon Blanc. But the folks we like to make happy are the ones that like a riper Sauvignon Blanc. And so our Sauvignon Blanc is mostly from Lake County and Mendocino County, sort of the further north, a little warmer. And we throw in a little bit of Semillon in just for good luck.
Okay.
And we do barrel ferment, 10, 12, sometimes up to 20% of the Sauvignon Blanc or Semillon in barrels, a brand new American, just a little bit. The rest of the juice has been fermented in stainless steel at a very cool temperature, which maintains the higher acidity and that forward fruit.
Sure.
But we do like to get them ripe. We like our little Sauvignon Blanc grapes to be not green, even in color, but we like them to get into that sort of golden hue that you get more fun flavors there.
Randy Ullum, Candle Jackson, and Jackson Family Wines, the master wine maker. Candle Jackson Vintner's Reserve Pinot Gris. It'll be featured at Liquor Plus in July.
We like to have it on the more minerally side, and then we add in a little bit of white Rhones to kind of have a little fun. Your Marsan, Roussan, little Viognier.
Yeah, so sneaky.
But it's definitely, it's 100% stainless steel fermented.
Yeah.
And most of the grapes for that, for our Pinot Gris, come from Monterey County, which is just south of San Francisco.
And finally, Kendall Jackson, Jackson Estate, Hawkeye Mountain, Cab Sav.
Remember, in the very, very beginning, I was saying the coast is nice, because of the influence, the cool air, et cetera, that gives you the longer growing season to develop your flavors and your colors. And especially in a red grape, you want to develop those tannins in the seeds. So this is a mountain-grown cab,
wow,
a beard cab with a fantastic view. Very great structure, long, focused, laser-like tannins. You can't go wrong.
I have a couple of questions, Randy. I'll let you go. One is, when you're in that boardroom or you're in the cellar, someone in the group says, yeah, but that's not Kendall Jackson. How long has it been established? What is a Kendall wine?
Okay, so we've been in business, the family has, for about 38 years.
Right.
And so basically, if you were going to define what is Kendall Jackson wine-wise? We believe in that you don't need to have a PhD or be a master sommelier to enjoy and understand our wines. We want wines to be enjoyed by everyone.
Approachable
to everyone. And so we focus on getting the grapes ripe, having all the aromatics right up front. You don't have to dive in the glass to find them. They're right there. And then when you taste that wine, you will taste pretty much everything you smelled in that glass.
Yeah.
So fruit forward, guaranteed, rich and full bodied. And then the pièce de résistance is to have this nice long lingering finish that is very, very pleasant and brings a smile to your face. And if you have that sensation, then you're going to have another sip and enjoy it. And then a few more sips lead to a glass, a couple of glasses to a bottle, and the rest is history. But that's Kendall Jackson.
Are there any new wines you want to leave us with? Anything?
Our new wines would be a varietal coming from a location from Mendocino County, from the mountains.
Rosé?
Yes, two rosés. A vineyard designate rosé from the Panorama Vineyard in Monterey, and then a Vintner's Reserve rosé. Predominantly, it's from Santa Barbara, Monterey, and Mendocino. Almost entirely Pinot Noir. We throw a little Syrah in for good luck. But the rosés are a very, it's a fast-growing segment, for
of
sure.
Of course.
A GSM,
yeah.
Grenache,
yeah.
Syrah, Mourvèdre from Santa Barbara.
Very nice. Pinot Noir.
We love it. And so for us, Pinot Noir is a very cool climate grape,
sure,
similar to the Chardonnay. So it's closer to the coast than, say, your Cabs and Pinot Gris are and Merlots. But our Pinots kind of follow that same pattern in how we blend the different counties together, so in regions. With the Chardonnay, getting back to that for a quick moment, Mendocino gives you crisp green apples. Sonoma gives you ripe apple. Carneros pear. Monterey, lemon and lime tones. And Santa Barbara, your tropical fruit, pineapple, mango, and pious. So now, all of that makes Winners Reserve Chardonnay. And then you have the Pinots loving the same cool area. So the Pinots that come from the lots that come from Santa Barbara are more on the sort of velvet leaf tone forest floor, but you know, kind of big round Pinots.
Sure.
Go up to say Monterey, and there you get the silky essence that adds into the palate of the Pinot, and more of the sort of darker fruit tones there. You know, and depending on the clone, of course, you know, the iterations of Pinot, be more strawberry or cranberry, things like that. And then you work your way up to the North Coast, and especially our little favorite little sliver of growing, a growing area called the Anderson Valley up in Mendocino County. Well, that is, we have like four ranches up there, and that gives you a Pinot that's almost like a Merlot. It's Pinot, you know, the really dark black cherry. But the most important thing that you get up there from these mountainy vineyards is this intense structure in the tannins. I mean, it's like, wow, this is a Pinot on steroids here. And so you almost like Merlot, but then you put all individually wonderful, but then when you blend them together for our Vintners Reserve, it's
the art of blending.
The art of blending, correct.
There's nothing like it. One final observation. Years ago, I was at a wine tasting in Yosemite National Park. The master of wine who stood up, he was from San Francisco, and we were
Evan.
Yeah, Evan. And he said, I just want to let you know that if I were buying land today to start a winery, I wouldn't buy in California. I wouldn't buy in Oregon. I would not buy in Washington. I would go all the way to British Columbia, and I would buy in British Columbia because that's the way the climate changes are taking us. If that's true, and I'm starting to say, well, certainly they're talking about heat units up here. Will we see an influx of really forward-thinking, really good winemakers heading in our direction, wineries either being planted or bought up? Could you see that happening? Could that come to fruition at some point?
Well, anything's possible, but the reality is that, you know, what you just stated is similar to what's going on down in Chile, which is the, you know, the obverse of the northern hemisphere. Sure. Along the Pacific. And so there, everyone's going further and further south. You know, we have a winery and properties down there that I manage personally there for the family. And, you know, in the very beginning, the deep south was way too cold and way too rainy. That same period, you know, 25 years ago, Oregon, to the north of California, was very cool, very wet, very rainy, and, you know, and made kind of like very, very light wines, you know, not that good from my perspective, in my little opinion. But over time,
yeah,
now, or the Oregonian weather has changed, and, you know, it's getting a little nicer. It's not raining quite as much there, and the wines are nice, you know, much richer and rounder and more well-developed than they were 25, 35 years ago. And so that trend, you know, in the northern hemisphere going north and the southern hemisphere going south is occurring. And so even in California, even in Sonoma County, vineyards that we planted that you could almost see the ocean, people thought we were nuts, and we realized we were pushing the envelope a bit, and that every now and then we'd lose a whole crop. But now, you know, they're wonderful just because of that change. And now, you know, people are going and planting like, you can't see the ocean, you shouldn't be planting. And of course, be high in case it rises. But same is happening, you know, on the, you know, as you continue up the coast. So, you know, British Columbia, you know, you would think, gosh, how can you even grow a grape in British Columbia? Well, you can. You know, the Okanagan is wonderful. That's a whole different ball game there.
Yeah.
And that's a very beautiful area. But I've loved the western part, you know, Vancouver and up, and the islands there are very nice. So, you know, I think that it was probably And I don't know for a fact, you know, what was going on in Western British Columbia 25, 35 years ago, but I'm sure there's more activity there now than there ever was, and that will probably continue.
Okay. As you can tell, I like talking to you. I'll let you go. Thank you so much for doing this. Does the senior VP know the website for Kendall Jackson?
KJ.com. If you go to KJ.com, you can read all about all of us.
Okay. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
Randy Ullum, the senior VP, and more importantly, the winemaster at Jackson Family Wines in Kendall Jackson in California, Napa, Sonoma. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch, who are now officially open. They offer two new releases from Crown and Thieves, The Winemaker's Wench, which is a crisp, aromatic summer slugger, and also an unfiltered rosé titled Pinky Blinder. You can find these wines and the stunning new Black Swift Vineyards at Black Swift, 2345 Boucherie Road, Kelowna, and hatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends at Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Road 13 has designed a new menu for seated wine tastings and vineyard experiences that make it easy to dig right in. Make your reservation and make a date with Road 13. And remember, every Tuesday is Dog Day at Road 13 from 11 to 4. Gourmet hot dogs paired with award-winning wines. Wines like their sparkling Chenin Blanc from the Home Block Vineyard, the oldest Chenin Blanc vines in North America. Made in the traditional method, this wine is truly a labor of love. You can find them at road13vineyards.com. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Jerry David Mulligan, and we have a returning guest. We get to talk to him sometimes once a year, sometimes not for 3 years, because he moves sideways, I move in the other opposite direction, but we're going to hook up. His name is Graham Pierce, and we're going to be talking about Kitsch, his winery of record right now. Hello, Gray.
Hey, Terry, how are you doing? Great to be here.
Thank you, man. Are you safe? Are you well?
Yeah, I'm really good, actually. I'm super excited to be up at my new position up here at Kitsch Wines in East Kelowna. Things are going well. We finally got summer coming in, warm weather, vineyards are growing great, and hopefully we're getting on the other side of this thing.
Do you remember the first place we met?
Yes. Do you?
Yes. Well, yes, of course, it was Mount Boucherie.
Well, I actually met you before that, but that's another story. But yes, I remember when you came to Mount Boucherie for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll get back to that one in a second. So in Mount Boucherie, I just remember that you had pools of wine, because they were growers. They had a lot of acreage, and they had a lot of fruit and a lot of juice. And I can remember you shaking your head saying, we got to get more equipment. We need more equipment in here. This is crazy.
That was it. Exactly. We had a lot of varieties from some pretty amazing vineyards, a lot of paint to play with, as I like to say.
Yeah.
Occasionally we were definitely struggling there, needed a few more tanks, needed some more processing equipment. So yeah, it was great. good times. They got a lot going on there now. They've done a big expansion
Sure. Out
there. So great to see the industry evolving.
And did you go straight to Black Hills?
Yeah, exactly. In 2008, I left Boucherie and went down to Oliver and went to Black Hills. And ran into a bunch down there for sure. I was down there for 10 years, actually.
And the big, well, outside of just being a winemaker and tending to those fields, you inherit a iconic brand, Nota Bene. You follow
right.
An iconic winemaker in Senka Tennant.
Yes.
Something identified with her and with Black Hills, the Nota Bene. That's a lot more pressure than what most winemakers would walk into. How did you handle it? How did you reason with it? And how did those 10 years feel for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. And when I got there, I knew the brand right out of the gate, and I had nothing but respect for what Thank and Bob and Pete and Sue McCarroll had been doing with that. And it felt definitely was very big shoes to fill. And you know, in winemaking, there's kind of no redos on some of that very premium fruit. wanted to make sure that we made the very best quality wine we could right out of the gate. So it was, yeah, it was fine. It was pressure definitely for the first few years. I was lucky to be able to work with Sank and Bob a fair bit and get to know the vineyards and the winemaking styles. Wanted to, they had a lot of success, so I wanted to do what they were doing with that. But you know, as we kind of went forward, we realized that we had a great product, and we were able to run with it a little bit and expand the brand and some of the other wines and wine offerings and, you know, the lines there. And it was great. Had a lot of fun down there for 10 years.
The blending process, was that joyous or was it scary?
You know what? It's funny. People, we put a lot of work into the blending of that wine because we ended up with a lot of different lots. And we really have a very big impact on how that final blend would be. And even though it was very enjoyable work, it was fairly hard because there was a lot riding on it. And when you're doing the splitting hairs trials, it's more concentration and more difficult than the preliminary trials where, you know, some of the wines are clearly way better head and shoulders than some of the other wines. But to put together the blends and to speculate where those wines are going to be by release, you know, and in 5 and 10 years. And, you know, Terry, we have a rich history of aging that wine and revisiting it in big vertical tastings and the whole thing. So obviously super important the wines are delicious on release, but also paramount that they age really well. So it's pretty tricky going into the blending, but I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. So after that, I thought it was maybe time to move on and then to see what else we could do. And so I was really fortunate to go work with Harry McWaters and Christy McWaters at the really cool property they have right downtown Penticton.
In the theater.
In the old theater, the Penmar Theater, built in 1955 with the, you know, amazing restaurant, tasting room, and everything located right downtown Penticton. You know, like I said, very fortunate to work with Harry, but it was unfortunate for him as it was his last year of his mm-hmm. life. So yep. He passed away, unfortunately, summer of 2019. So it was kind of a sad time for us down there. But then eventually I saw this opportunity had come up at Kitsch. I'd known Rhea and Trent Kitsch a little bit over the years since they started this property. Been living up here actually for a number of years already and just felt it was a great opportunity. I didn't want to let pass by. There's, of course, only so many opportunities for winemakers like myself in the Valley. Been around for a few years and definitely an amazing brand, but we've got a long way to go and a lot we can do with it. So I saw that as a great opportunity, a challenge for me, and something that I really felt that I could have a really positive impact on this amazing team and program they had going here. So I, you know, jumped at that opportunity.
Graham Pierce, the new winemaker at Kitsch Wines in the Okanagan. How many different vineyards are you pulling from?
Right now for Kitsch, we are very focused in East Kelowna. So we've got the, you know, the existing vineyards where the Esther's Riesling and the Maria's Block Riesling, the Chard and the Pinot Noir come from. And then we just planted, when I started here in the beginning of May, we immediately planted another 11-acre piece right where Trent and Rhea's house is, right on East Kelowna Road. So mostly all the vineyards that we're working with are right on this East Kelowna bench. We're getting some Pinot from a great guy right on the corner, sort of kitty corner to the other property, and then a couple other vineyards, but it's just a few tons out of those right now. So, you know, we're kind of in our growth process as these vineyards build out, and could be definitely another acquisition on the horizon. And we are definitely looking to work with some of the great growers that we have on the East Kelowna bench, but we're trying to stay focused and, you know, fairly close in this area and really represent what's going on. So,
hey, Graham, what's the signature of that particular slope, that area?
Here we are on heavier soils with a little bit more clay and loam and actually quite a few big rocks. But here the wine style is crisp and racy. We got lots of good natural acidity for things like Pinot Noir. We got great hang time. To me, that's something that we can do really well up here that's, you know, tougher to do in the south with things like Pinot Noir. Riesling, we have a lot of Riesling planted. Makes, you know, this is for me one of the best areas. This is where for time we're also getting it from a very similar site, and I really love that Riesling. So, you know, it's more on those style, crisper, racier, and, you know, true BC expressions of those varieties.
Graham Pierce, the new winemaker at Kitsch Wines in the Okanagan. Which brings us to this incredible block party. First of all, I just finished a special on field blends. People were of two minds. One, they love field blends, but they weren't putting it on their bottles. And some didn't understand. Some said, I don't think we can do field blends. I don't think we have the right varietals or the growing conditions or whatever. So is, in fact, block party your field blend?
It's a field blend from all of the different blocks that I was just speaking of in this area.
So you got some Riesling, right, you got some Pinot Gris, you got some Chardonnay, and you got Pinot Noir. Do you pick them separately, but then do you blend them after they have shown themselves?
Yeah, exactly. So they were all fermented separately and then blended, you know, to spec after the fact. So.
What do you think it would be like, just a happen chance, you think, great, if you took those varietals and threw them all in the same system and they blended themselves together, would you be horrified or would you be surprised?
Like you mean co-fermenting them?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, that could very well work, and co-ferments can be very cool and unique and bring something else to the table. The struggle sometimes with that is that they're not at, each variety isn't at the peak of ripeness at the same time. So we might want to be picking the Chardonnay a little bit earlier than the Riesling and then the Pinot Noir a little bit later. And that's sort of like when I look at, you know, sometimes I've been able to co-ferment, say, Syrah and Viognier together, but a lot of years the Viognier is maybe 2 weeks away the Syrah is 2 weeks away when you're picking the Viognier and you don't want to let it hang. So if it all lined up perfectly, it'd be really cool to do some co-ferment, and that might happen in the future. and then I'll get you in and we could try it and see. We can see how it works, or if only we can if put I together can, a better blend after the fact.
Only if I can also stomp. Here's the deal.
You can definitely stomp. I think that one's hand stomp for sure, foot stomp for sure.
I love, by the way, I love the nose on Block Party. I absolutely love the nose as soon as you open. So the Riesling kind of carries it, then the Pinot Gris, and then the Chardonnay?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, for me, you know, if you're going to have to pick one single variety as being dominant, and it is 70% of the blend, so it makes sense. Plus, Riesling is quite an aromatic variety. So, yeah, that to me, that carries the weight of it. But when you really go through the wine, everything is there. I get a lot of Pinot Gris aromatics as well, too. And I think that kind of, I think a lot of it appeals to people that you know, that like Riesling, but they're not always into drinking, the super intense Rieslings. So very nice and soft, well-rounded wine. Just perfect. I mean, it's getting nice and warm today, so just talking about it is making me feel like having a glass. Perfect on a hot day, overlooking a vineyard, overlooking the lake, the ocean.
How many cases? How many cases did you make?
That one's one of our bigger productions, so I think it's just over about 1,000 cases.
Cool. I saw a price go by. Let me see. Just $21 cellar door price.
Great value for that wine.
He is a Graham Pierce, wonderful winemaker. You know him from his days at Mount Boucherie. Certainly his 10 years making and creating and blending Nota Bene and all the other wines at Black Hills in the South Okanagan, and his short tenure at Time Wines in downtown Penticton. Now he's at Kitsch, and we're going to go through some of the portfolio next. This is Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends at Road 13 on the Golden Mile. Road 13 has designed a new menu for seated wine tastings and vineyard experiences that make it easy to dig right in. Make your reservation and make a date with Road 13. And remember, every Tuesday is Dog Day at Road 13. From 11 to 4, gourmet hot dogs paired with award-winning wines. Wines like their sparkling Chenin Blanc from the Home Block Vineyard, the oldest Chenin Blanc vines in North America. Made in the traditional method, this wine is truly a labor of love. You can find them at road13vineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Row 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Okay, first things first, remember Clippers is with a K. Shop online with them. Just go to shopclippers.ca. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. The very popular guest suites at Orofino still have openings in the fall. Here's the latest news from Orofino. This is such great news. They are open for tastings. and Row 14 at Clippers is back. They're open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. You want to write them, info@row14.ca. Welcome back, Tasting Room Radio, Terry David Mulligan. We're in conversation, mid-conversation, with Graham Pierce, who many of you would have met and known and really liked instantly when you tasted anything that came from Black Hills over the last 10 years, including Nota Bene. He's now the winemaker at Kitsch Wines. And just like Black Hills, where he followed Sanka Tennet, he now has to put his stamp on the wines of Kitsch that we knew and loved with winemaker Grant Biggs. So Graham, the wines we're talking about right now were made by Grant Biggs.
Yeah, they're all Grant's wines. They're awesome. He did a great job with them. I think there's very nice stylistic similarity throughout the portfolio.
The next block party that we see will be your signature.
Yeah, exactly. That won't be out for obviously a little bit until we get the 2020 vintage in and next spring get that out there and wait to see how these kind of wines pan out and then look at what they're going to do. But I like the idea of the Riesling dominance on that wine. I think it makes sense for what we have in this vineyard and what we've been doing. And I love the impact that the Pinot Gris and the Chard have on it. So I don't think I'm going to go too far away from that. Unless something totally different in the vineyard, and it kind of leads us to that conclusion. But I never get to, when the people ask kind of the philosophy question, which isn't my fave, but I just say it's really best expression of fruit because you have to just be aware of what's going on. Every year can be so different in vineyards, but you never know how it's going to pan out at the end of the year. So sometimes you think you're going to make amazing, rich, full-bodied Syrah, and it turns out maybe the best case scenario is to make it into a rosé. So just got to keep our eyes on the prize. And
Graham Pierce, the winemaker, brand new, spanking new, and he's speaking from Kitsch World Headquarters in East Kelowna.
That's it.
The rosé is, as should be, if it's not, if you can't make it out of Gamay, you have to be a Pinot Noir rosé, and it's a beautiful bottle of wine.
It's great, eh? That's really one of my favorites, one of my go-tos in the lineup here. And I do like the Gamay rosé as well, too, but for me, Pinot is one of the best varieties to work with, especially Pinot from up here. Talked about a little bit more hang time, but still coming in at great numbers with not too much alcohol, great natural acidity, lots of strawberry on the nose, amazing mouthfeel. So, yeah, rosé sales are up, doing really well right now. Very popular wine shop out of the market.
Are you a color guy? I mean, when you make your rosé down the road, what color do you want to see?
I have to admit, I'm not as much of a color guy as I am aromatic and tannin and bitterness and astringency. So when I'm making the press cut, the time when we're going to press that, for the listeners, for most of the time when you're making these wines, you're going to crush and stem the red grapes and then allow a certain amount of time for the juice to be in contact. So it can vary from just a couple hours to something where it's giving up its color right away. You want to have a very light color to maybe up to 24 hours. To sure. Occasionally, even with Gamay in the past, I've even started to ferment quickly in a tank and then pressed immediately after because it's so great that it doesn't give up its color too easily. But for me, I'm really going more on taste. I'm more worried that if you're going to end up with too much tannin pickup, and that's going to be hard to deal with, or potential for a little bit of bitterness or astringency. So, and also, if you have great aromatics that are coming through and they're really getting more and more delicious as you're tasting the juice, then you maybe not want to make the cut on that either because you're thinking, well, it's just getting better. So sometimes the rosé I've made has been a little bit darker than maybe what the current market standard was, but I felt that was the best wine based on flavor and mouthfeel and structure. So, yeah, I'm not that much of a color guy. So.
Okay. We're going to have a problem. Then we're going to have a problem with you and I. You know what I'm saying?
So, do you like the lighter rosés or the little bit darker rosés?
Almost opaque. I'm standing in stores and I'm listening to the conversation around me. And people are buying their rosé based on color first, and then they narrow it down to maybe a specific brand. Color seems to be pretty important in the rosé section these days.
No, I agree. And I think sometimes when you go a little darker, then, you know, people kind of get the wrong impression that it's not just serious wine and maybe it's beer and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
So you're definitely right.
I just love the fact that this is in the bottle and available. It's really good.
Right.
How many cases were made? Do you remember?
I think about 400 cases on that one.
Thank you. It just tells me how hard we have to search and seek and chase.
Yeah, that's one you need to seek out because it's not going to be around for too much longer.
No. Graham Pierce. Kitch Wines. He is going to make his stamp on this winery and these wines. And I've told you this before. He is someone you want to follow. Follow the man down the road and find the wines that he's making and doing a hands-on thing. The Pinot Gris. Now, everybody's growing and bottling and making a Pinot Gris. But I'm starting to taste different influences now. And this is one of them. When you open a bottle of Pinot Gris, you try to give yourself a clean slate. All right, what am I doing? No preconceived notions. I was pleasantly and delightfully surprised at this bottle of wine.
Great, hey. I mean, Pinot Gris, like you mentioned, is a very popular variety. Great variety for BC, does really well. And a very consumer-friendly wine that people, you know, the world over enjoy and love. And it's only become more and more popular in my 20 years in the industry up here. But like you say, that's a very interesting example. Some of them to me are a little bit thin and tiny bit boring and, you know, fine wine, nothing wrong with them, but they don't really, stand up and draw much attention. Whereas that to me, charging out of the glass, tons of aromatic, and then amazing balance, good acidity, not too sweet at all. But sort of like fruit salad in the glass. Yeah.
It's citrus. Got the lemon, of course, on the nose. Floral.
I find it goes all the way. One of those wines that has so many different aromatics. So it's very, you know, for Pinot Gris, it's a pretty complex aromatic wine.
Yep. By itself or with cheese, nice soft cheeses?
Yeah.
Totally. Some 500 cases.
Or, you know, we call the winery, of course. Got a great wine club.
Tell me about the 2018 Chard.
Chardonnay, we do two Chardonnays. So we have a barrel fermented Chardonnay, and then we have the Chardonnay. I think you have the 2018 non-7 barrel, right?
Right.
So that's mainly stainless steel, crisp, delicious, refreshing, you know, kind of that classic style of an oak Chardonnay from the site. So long hang time, lots of acidity, good mouthfeel. Great. I mean, I kind of like that style. Delicious food wine, crisp and refreshing. Doesn't like overpower the food. I love Chardonnay.
Tasting Room Radio, Terry David Mulligan. We're in conversation with Graham Pierce. He's now the winemaker at Kitch Wines outside Kelowna. I saw something go by about mango trees. Get planted.
Yeah, good point. Thanks, Jerry. That's a collaboration that we have with Tentree, the clothing manufacturer from Vancouver. It does a lot of amazing charitable work. And so with that wine, for every bottle that you buy, Tentree plants 5 mangrove trees in Madagascar. So a very worthwhile charity. Kitch has done a really cool job of working with both local charities and global charities as well. It's a big part of what we're doing up here. Supporting it of many really worthy organizations as we can.
And here's the cool thing, 700 cases produced. That's good. I like that a lot.
Yeah,
basic exactly. Price point, cellar door price point is $24, so they can raise some dough. Should we look for the second Chard? Is it out there?
It's not out there too much in retail, to be honest. It's probably best to look for the Tentree Chard, and it's got a cool little neck tag on the crown.
And so your second Chardonnay, I have to go seek it. I have to go find it out. Is it lightly oaked?
Not over the top, but it's pretty much all in barrel. So full barrel ferment. Yeah, all barrel and then aged for 8 months in barrel. So yeah, it's great though. It's, you know, it's reminiscent of the style made. So big, rich, full. You know, kind of the real deal Chardonnay, but not over the top. It's not 200% new wood. You know, it's just a small percentage of new wood and lots of second and third fill barrels. wine that I'm really excited about. And that's what we're working on right now, is bottling now the 2019 version of the 7-barrel Chardonnay.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, Graham, we're waiting for your wines to show. Once right. again, you've found yourself at a winery identified with very specifically with somebody who made the previous wines, and you have to find your own voice. You have to actually step out and say, this is what I think these wines could be. And that's what we're waiting for. Because we believe in you and we like what you do.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate that.
And finally,
very cool.
And finally, what do you think the new normal is going to be up there? Tasting rooms are open?
Yeah, so I mean, we've obviously had to make some adjustments, and we started a few weeks ago when we got the all okay from Bonnie Henry to reopen our tasting room. But we've gone to a new format where it's by appointment only, and you have a dedicated space for you and your little group of people to try wine, and it's at least 6 feet, if not farther, from any other groups, and it's kind of where a lot of wine shops are going, where it's a little bit higher level of service, a little more connection to the wine, and having a dedicated person helping you out the whole way. So in some ways, it's a little bit better than the just going up to the tasting bar with no appointment, having a chance to be very busy and not being able to get the information or the experience that you want. So for us, it's been great. I mean, it's obviously been a little bit more work and a little bit more complicated to coordinate all this, as it's been for all the wineries and for all of the businesses, but going really well for us. And of course, we've been very lucky in the Okanagan that we haven't had as many cases as some other areas. So everyone's been very careful and whatnot. We're following all the protocols. But yeah, it's been great to be able to be open for business, and we found that people are very happy to be coming out and to be experiencing the style of tasting that we're offering. So we've been quite busy out of the gate, so we're hoping that just continues for the rest of the summer, and that we get back to, obviously it's not going to be the way that it was, but back to the sort of new normal, if you will. So far, so good.
Okay. Did you hear the news report that Unsworth was sold?
Yeah, that's very exciting. Barbara Banky and the Jackson family. It's great to see, you know, that kind of very established wine family seeing the value in the BC industry and specifically on the island. So it'd be interesting to see what they want to do with it. And, you know, if that brings other investment from California into the industry at this point. So,
yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, especially that interest in investment. Because if one comes, there'll be more. There'll be more.
There could definitely be more. Well, and those guys, I don't know them personally, but they seem to be very shrewd in the business, and they've got a lot of great brands. So, yeah, it'd be very interesting to see what happens with that. I really quite like the Unsworth wines, too. Some of those sparklings are really, really good. So I would imagine the wines will just improve. And yeah, I think it's a good thing for the industry.
I hope to talk to you before this year is done. And I'm really looking forward to your wines. Truly, I mean that.
Thanks, Terry. Well, we'd love to host you up here. And for all your listeners as well, too, please book an appointment and come visit us up at Kitch Wines in East Kelowna.
KitchWines.ca. # Okanagan in a glass.
That's it.
KITSCH, Graham Pierce, the winemaker. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. Awesome to talk to you.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by our friends in the Similkameen Valley, Orofino Vineyards, and Row 14 at Clippers Organic Acres. Okay, first things first, remember Clippers is with a K. Shop online with them. Just go to shopclippers.ca. And from John and Virginia Weber at Orofino, take a moment to check out the brand new Orofino website, orofinovineyards.com. The very popular guest suites at Orofino still have openings in the fall. Here's the latest news from Orofino. This is such great news. They are open for tastings. And Row 14 at Clippers is back. They're open Wednesday to Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. You want to write them, info@row14.ca.